welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 304, take two of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford, who's very patient when it comes to dealing my...
What do you mean I'm patient?
Slightly out of date, 7-year-old computer.
I think that we need to have a whip round with the public to see whether we can buy you a new computer. This one's dying.
All donations, send it to my PayPal, edjlam@gmail.com. Yeah, send me donations if you could, that'd be handy. But no, it's done well, this thing, but we're getting there, we're getting close.
Yeah, but you have to keep putting another shovel of coal on the fire to keep it going. It's steam driven.
Austerity UK. Anyway, we're talking about pain and suffering.
I'm in pain and suffering.
Yeah, well, you need to learn how to get over it. So. And patience with this whole thing. But it's not going to be too downbeat, this one. There's always light at the end of the tunnel, isn't there, with us?
There is. And sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel is the headlight on the front of an oncoming train.
And that's the sight of my hard drive about to give way or my battery about to explode.
Yeah.
Amongst other things, liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Take a look for the show notes and links. Sign up for our email list and you'll get some free meditation files, which might come in handy, actually. We might talk about meditation and breathing exercises today. And all previous episodes are online there as well. Do a little search for whatever issue you might be struggling with, and there'll probably be something there to help you out. What you been up to, Sean? How's life?
Life is very, very good. I'm off to Qatar at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And do a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, which it's quite warm out there. It's up sort of 30, but they've got pretty big sandstorms going on. And so humidity, so I don't know what I'm walking into, but it'll be fun.
You'll be fine, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You'll get by. Very nice. And a little break from crazy life in the UK, is it? Or?
Yeah, it's a break from the crazy life in the UK, but it's pretty crazy over there at the moment. There's a lot of stuff going on. So it won't be so much of an easy 2 weeks. I don't think, as I'm used to when I go over there, I think it's going to be pretty hectic.
Yeah.
What's going on?
All right. Well, we might actually have to record one over the airwaves, mightn't we?
Yeah, we'll have to. In fact, yes.
While you're out there, so that'll be fun and games.
Yep.
Okay, we're talking about living with fear or living in fear today. And I won't explain why, because something's happened to a friend of mine, which is kind of quite tragic, actually. But it got me thinking about the person involved and how they and their family were living in constant kind of, or whether they were living in constant fear about a specific health issue, which is kind of was hovering over this person. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of people maybe that Sean deals with who have health issues hanging over them, and that got me thinking about what else we live in fear with all the time, maybe domestic abuse or bullying in the workplace, financial issues or job security, which, you know, at any time. Or, you know, obviously there's kind of national issues at the moment, international issues hanging over us, climate change, which this kind of, everyone seems to be living in fear. Or potentially living in fear. So how do we you've got me thinking.
Well, I want to turn it on its head and say, living in fear is living without control. Once you have control, there is no fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. It's when if we have a medical condition that we are out of control of, so we could drop dead any moment, or we could have some kind of seizure or fit, One of the worst things I've had to deal with is people, not just in older life, but people that have been damaged in different ways, that have incontinence. And to be incontinent of bladder is difficult, but it can be manageable with a catheter or something.
Right.
But to be incontinent of bowel is a real problem because of the smells and stuff like that. And when you get a young person who's been damaged in some way, and that they have incontinence of bowel, is really, really hard for them. Oof. Yeah, and that can also be true if you've got somebody who's had a colostomy and they've got a bag fitted.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And the main thing is, when you lose control of something, so if you're in a domestic violence situation, you're being controlled by the perpetrator of the violence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's that kind of stuff. So the issue normally is about how do I take back control?
Oh, yeah, okay, there's a familiar tagline. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the universe is quite a hostile place when you think about it, isn't it? That we exist in. And, you know, in any moment, our existence can be wiped out by either something tiny, like some tiny little airborne disease that we happen to breathe in, or something huge, like an asteroid that smashes into planet Earth and wipes everyone out in an instant.
But there's something in all this for me, which is about, is it happening now? Is it happening now? I mean, yes, an asteroid might crash into us next week, the year after. It could be tomorrow. It could be in an hour's mm-hmm. time. But it's not happening now. But I can live like it is.
Yeah.
You know, and so much of fear is about the anticipation of what could happen rather than what is actually happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an article on lifehack.org that I will link to in our show notes, and it's more of a general article about mastering your fear or your fears and how to overcome them. And the first thing it mentions really is that fear is an important kind of signal. So obviously people don't like being afraid in general, but if you are afraid or living in fear, then it's a signal for change, so you should try and use it as a positive thing.
Mm.
Do you go along with that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that... that in many ways, fear, anxiety, all those things are positive emotions because they keep us safe. It's when they become disorders it's a problem.
Yeah.
You know. And the other thing is, what do I mean when I use the word fear? Because there's a whole spectrum of meaning, from the fear of catastrophic ending through to the fear of, I might miss that bus. Yeah, what do we mean? We use these words, but we mean different things when we use them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that the issue is about how we observe something. I'm minded of Spike Milligan's limerick.
Go on.
Yeah, things that go bump in the night should not really give you a fright. It's the hole in each ear that lets in the fear, that in the absence of light.
Oof.
And the thing is that's kind of real, because there is nothing to be scared of. Unless you start thinking about, oh, bump of the night, oh, it's dark, oh, I can't see. So it's like we start to develop this fear. You know, what are we scared of?
Yeah, what is it with... just last night, little Jacob, my youngest, woke up half 11, no, half 10, actually, before we come upstairs, you know, crying his eyes out, Mummy, Mummy, Mummy. So she ran upstairs. I was a bit gutted he wasn't saying Daddy for some reason. Anyway, yeah, she ran up. And, he just woken up and he was... he'd obviously had a bad dream, and I could hear him go, I'm afraid, I'm scared in the dark, it's too dark. Do we have these kind of inbuilt kind of fears within us, or do our minds
well,
just
start... Well, it's weird.
At a certain age, do our minds start to wander?
Do you see being in pitch black as scary?
Not anymore.
Because I think...
But I did as a kid, you know, I didn't like to sleep without some kind of light on in the landing or something like that. Or...
No, I loved it in the dark.
Oof.
Because the thing is, and it's to do with abuse, I'm sure, but it's to do with, I like being in a room with a locked door in the dark. Because I know I'm completely safe and no one can get to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I still feel that now. Whereas Ryu likes to sleep with the door open, which to me is completely odd. Why wouldn't sleep with the door open?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I go out running at 5 o'clock in the morning, I dress in black because I like to be unseen in the dark, which means I scare the crap out of people walking dogs and things like
that.
Yeah, so I wear black and it's dark. I've even got a black hat on, not a hoodie or anything like that.
Not a balaclava, but
it's like, I like to be anonymous in the dark because to me that's safety. Whereas for other people, to be in the dark is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it is how you look at it, isn't it?
All right. Well, let's go on to abuse then, because you had a bit of a fun upbringing with your dear old dad, as you call him,
mm-hmm.
from now and again. So you were living in constant fear for a good period of your life?
No, the way things would be is when you've got a difficult person in a family, and I think this is true about kind of alcoholics, drug addicts, all kinds of people you've got in a family. It's, again, it's the not knowing, it's the out of control. So the thing would be, when that person's not in the house, everyone's safe, as soon as that person enters the house, people's different levels of fear kick off. So people might disappear to corners of the house once the key goes in the door. And it's because you don't know, do you? You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know what's going to happen when the front door opens. And when they walk through the front door, what kind of mindset are they going to have when they do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it could be that the person's completely fine and that's great. Or if they're in a mood, then that's terrifying. But because you don't know which way it's going to be, you fear the worst, because that's how we keep ourselves safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, throughout evolution, fear the worst, protect yourself.
So what what kind of mood? Was your dad, was he never the kind of guy that would come in after work or whatever and he'd be in a cheery mood and give you a hug and say, how's your day been, Sean?
Never had a hug or anything like that. There'd be things like Friday night, he'd always come home with sweets. So you get a roll of Rolos or something like that. And that was the nearest that I ever experienced him to get to an expression of love. You know,
not his last Rolo.
We don't get to, no, I get the whole packet.
Wow.
You know, that kind of stuff. But because he worked long hours, so he'd often be out before I got up and wouldn't come until after I'd gone to bed. That was okay. So weekends were tough, Sundays particularly, or holidays, Christmas, stuff like that.
Mm.
And they're one of the things about in our house now, people love a Sunday dinner. I hate Sunday dinners because the connotations are horrible for me. And they
even all, now?
Well, I'm okay with it. But it's like, I don't think, woo, a Sunday dinner. I think, oh, God, Sunday dinner. And it's because that goes back to childhood, too.
Is that not something you can, well... you can get rid of then that instant.
Yeah, it's not kind of in...
You've got some work to do, man.
But it's not in me like, oh my God, I'm so scared. It's not like that. It's more like, okay, everyone's going, let's have a Sunday dinner. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, let's do a Sunday dinner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't float my boat in the same way. You know.
But still you do it.
Yeah, because I'm a hero.
Yeah. What were your tricks as a kid then, apart from going to hide in a corner of the house?
I was to go and hide in the corner of the house. I used to read books.
In the dark?
No, with a torch. I used to have a torch underneath the sheets, read a book, and get lost in the book. So I would get out of the negative feeling of the present by going into books. And it was the books that were around me at the time. So there was a lot of Agatha Christie I read when I was quite young, and also Dickens.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's a good lad. Good lad. Amazing characters when you get into the characters. I used to get lost in it. It was good.
Wow.
Cool.
All right, well, what about with guys you're working with now then who kind of are living with health issues? Because at some point, all of us will die. That tend generally is what has happened to people so far in our existence. Everyone.
Are you thinking of changing that?
Well, there are people working on everlasting... Like living forever, but
everlasting Ed.
I'm assuming that I will die one day, probably more than likely. And everyone that has lived so far and got to the end has died. So we are all going to die. So how do you work with, or when you're working with people who have terminal health issues? So they have that, because you know I don't know when I'm going to die. I might die tomorrow. I might die 50 years from now. But if someone's got a terminal health issue hanging over them, how do they cope with that?
One of my experience. Is, and this has happened to me on several occasions working with people who have got a terminal diagnosis, is that when someone gets a terminal diagnosis, they could be dead fairly quickly or they could be dead in several years. The difference is that some people would die every day for years and some people will live every day and die at the end.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Pow, put that on a T-shirt, man. That's a good.
So, but that's the thing, isn't it? It's like, are we dying every day? I mean, both of us are getting nearer to the end because that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We assume that we're going to die before our kids and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we can either, because I guess from the moment that you're born, you're in the process of dying. Yeah. Just because someone says to you, "Hey, you've got this illness," means you're going to die quicker. Does
yep.
that make it different, worse? What does that make it?
Mm.
But it's us, it's what we do with it. No.
Yep.
So the thing is that even if you are totally terminal and you're going to die in 2 months, you can still live today. You don't have to be living 2 months in the future. I know it's easy. People say to me, because I say these things to people, and people say to me, but it's easy for you to be saying that because you're not in my body going through what I'm going through. And so we have conversations about how they can change that or, you know, make it different for them. But the reality is that the more that you learn to live in the present, which is all the kind of the mindfulness stuff, which I go on about all the time, mm-hmm. the more you learn to live in the present, the more you can be here in the moment, the less what happens tomorrow and the day after is of concern to you.
Right.
On the basis you know you're going to die. Are you worried about dying?
Not right now, no.
No?
Although, yeah, no, I'm not. But my only kind of closest experience with it, apart from getting whacked on my bike... which was fun, was skin cancer that I had last year, which mm-hmm. is, you know, really, it's the best cancer.
it's super cancer, that one. I love that.
It's the one to have. Yeah. You just whip it off, really, and so and on you go. But that was my first in-life like experience of, like, blooming heck, something could happen at any moment, you know, I might get another one of these, I might have one that I don't know about. So that was like, kind of woke me up, so to speak.
I think one of the things that seems to affect people greatly, in my experience, is the concept of what happens when you die. Because what happens when you die dictates very much how you live and how much you value what you've got in terms of life. If you believe that an ending is an ending and there's nothing after that, then I see some people that say, well, there's no point in carrying on, there's nothing, so I might as well just go now.
Yeah.
I see other people that say, no, I've got to get everything that I can, they'll rob everybody else blind so they can get as much as they can in this short time that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or there are some people that see it as ongoing, whether that's reincarnative or karmic or whatever. And that makes them want to be more mindful and appropriate in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But all those things tie into this idea of fear. What are we scared of? You know, what are we scared of? If life is a flow that flows from birth to death and back again, then everything's a cycle, like the seasons. You know, what are we scared of losing? If people live after death, then death doesn't exist, does it? All that happens is your body stops working.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that if somebody... And I do get this with people who have a very profound faith, who literally have said to me when they've been terminal, thanks for all your help and support. It's been fabulous. Look after yourself and I'll see you upstairs later. Mm. You know, that kind of thing. Because they're very confirmed in what they're doing and where they're going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for them, the fear is taken out of it. But overall, when it comes back to it, to me, the fear is the not knowing.
Yeah.
And not being in control. That's the thing.
And do you think there is like fewer people now... like define themselves as religious or, you know, as having like a spiritual side?
Well, it's weird. More and more people that I work with say, I'm not a religious person, but I have a lot of spiritual values or spiritual beliefs. Yeah. And I think that religion certainly over the last 50, 100 years hasn't done itself any favours. And when you see religious-based wars and things like that, you can start to see why people are kind of back away from that.
Yeah.
Because it becomes us and them. And if you're trying to create an inclusive world, us and them doesn't work.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah.
Whereas if you see things from a more spiritual point of view, that's a more inclusive thing.
Mm.
Yeah. So I see that quite a lot.
In terms of bullying at work or at school, that kind of thing, living in fear of having to go somewhere at the same place every day and see that person, I guess, like coming home to your dad. I guess with our work, we have a greater flexibility in terms of planning an escape route from work into another place of work or another career entirely.
That does depend, though. I mean,
a lot of people feel trapped in their job.
Yeah, it's, let's say you're a single parent woman and you're dependent on the job, and you've got to support the kids, and someone starts to abuse you in some way in the workplace. Maybe it's the boss. What do you do? Do you comply or do you leave? Do you create a fuss? If you're a strong person, you give them a slap. If you're not, you get abused. You know. So there's fear syndromes around things like that.
Yeah.
And one of the kinds of things that I've only glimpsed at, and it's the resistance to pain thing going with the flow. And I remember... being in hospital, I had all my wisdom teeth taken out at the same time. So they dislocate your jaw to do that. and then you stitch right the way around, so it's fun. But the next day, the thing that I discovered very, very quickly is the most painful thing on earth to do when you're in that position is to yawn.
Oof.
Yeah, and I could feel a yawn coming, and I'm holding my jaw shut like that.
Jeez.
Yeah,
wow.
Because the yawn's so painful coming, and just that fear of yawning, that sounds mad, but then actually lying there being scared that I'm going to yawn, you know, that would sound mad, but it was very real.
Yeah.
So I do get the idea of if you have experienced pain and you're waiting for the pain to come again, that's a very fearful place to be. Yeah.
Yeah, or sneezing when you've got cracked ribs, that's pretty bad.
I've
had that. And actually, my father-in-law, he had a heart bypass operation a couple of years ago, and obviously he had to rip his whole chest open to access it. Relatively routine thing to do now, but I remember him sneezing, like we were all together as a family a couple of weeks after the operation, and he's not in great shape, but he's recovering, and he had his chest ripped open, and I remember him kind of crossing his arms like mad as this sneeze came on, and you could tell from the look on his face that he was just not looking forward to this next 10 seconds of his life, and this sneeze came, and oh man, he looked in so much pain and agony, but yeah, he's fine now, but the back, you were living with short-term pain, but okay, well, I'm going to link to a couple of other articles about overcoming fears and stuff. But the first one I link to, the life hack one, the kind of the last point six of mastering your fear, is about planning for greatness. In that, using your fear and kind of using these signals gives you the opportunity to plot a way out of that fear, whether it be the job that's not suiting you, and even if it's something that you don't ever achieve, the kind of the path to that potential greatness is really rewarding. If you know what I mean. Does that make any sense?
One of the things about that, you're saying the path to it, and to me that's enjoying the journey and not being so focused on the destination. Because when you enjoy the journey, you are actually living in the moment.
Yep.
Yeah, whereas if you start keep projecting to the end of the path, that can either create anxiety or fear or, you know, drive, whatever. But you have to stay in the moment.
Yep. All right, cool. Have you got a resource for us? Is there anything else you want to mention?
No, I'm okay. I've got a book here, which is by... It's a Buddhist nun called Pema Chodron, and it's called Places That Scare You. And it's about the fears that we live with from more of a kind of a mindful sort of Buddhist perspective. Mm. It's not exactly religious. It's more of a Buddhist kind of thing. But that idea that you can... face your dragons, face the bits that scare you, and not let them defeat you.
Yeah.
You know, that's, to me, is important. But we'll be back to the mindfulness meditative stuff there.
Cool. All right, I actually haven't got a resource, I've forgotten, but I'm just thinking about that. Overcoming fears. Probably a good time to relive The Dark Knight, the Batman trilogy, Christopher Nolan's movies, because Batman, as a kid, is terrified of bats, and he has to face that fear and become his fear. And project it onto his enemies.
Yeah, right.
But that trilogy, Batman Begins, Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises, pretty cool.
The Dark Knight of the Soul.
Very good films.
Yeah.
All right, anything else you want to say?
No, I'm good. I am good.
Is there anyone out there that's dealing with this stuff, drop us an email, get in touch via the website or social media. And let us know what you're going through and if we can help. And if there's anything else you would like us to talk about in an upcoming episode, liveinthepresent.co.uk. Right, Sean, take it easy.
And you. See ya.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.